David Knapp here.
David Dearborn here.
Bob Grace here.
Kirsty Alchinski here.
All right, we're ready to go with recording, Shelley?
Yep.
All right. Any public comment? Chloe, you don't want to have any public comment yet as a public?
All right. Her boss is making her work too late at night.
No. We're here in the cone of silence here. All right, so minutes from June 13th and then the special meeting. Did anybody have any questions on those?
No, but I'll make a motion to accept both of them.
Thanks, Dave. Can I have a second?
Second.
All right, thanks, Bob. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All righty, so we're off and running. Mr. Director, why do we have you?
I have a few items for executive session, but none of them are going to need to be voted on. So at the end, I'll just ask for you to adjourn the executive session.
Okay.
I'll go over those. But all right, whole home repair. We did finally get a signed agreement between us and the county last week, and how it's going to work. The county essentially took a bunch of the responsibility off of us. They will be, and they have, reached out to municipalities that are in our region. They've prioritized doing outdoor, like facade and roof repair in specifically the city of Cory and boroughs in our region. And so this is kind of almost think a modified Main Street sort of restoration program, which I think is actually very strategic. And I'm appreciative of the county doing some of the legwork in terms of getting us, essentially getting the burden of prioritizing off of our backs and putting it onto the municipality's backs. And here's why I think that's so strategic. There are many instances where there's code violations or something from people that you just hate giving a violation to, like 90-year-old grandma who's lived in the house since 1960 something, understands that she, you know, she can't cut the lawn, she can't fix the soffit or whatever. So this program is now going to be something where we can, the municipality can say, hey, I know of these issues, and this person, you know, this house is one that is prime. So they're then going to give the RDA the list of 5 to 10 or something like that. Say, these are the priorities that we want you to start with. Then we will go to those homeowners, check their eligibility and whatever, walk through the application process. But in that scenario, then it's the municipalities that are making that decision rather than this board, for instance, mm-hmm. trying to decide something in Mill Village, I mean, where, you know, from a list of 100. Instead, now it's going to be that nice list of like 10 priorities or something. So I think it's very strategic and I'm appreciative of it. I have been going to some of the municipalities around us to tell them about it. It sounds like the county executive himself has actually also been going to some of them. So I've been out beating the bushes and we already have a list of some properties. So
nice.
Off to the races. I don't have anything on ThermoFab. I did want to add that I have, in our strategic plan, we had made note of the idea of a new high-tech incubator center. I am letting you know that I'm actively working on a project charter to figure out the specs of that and have had preliminary conversations with Ashley Porter in order to get rough estimates, very rough drawings, that kind of thing, together. I'm somewhat basing it off the e-center at Linden Point in Mercer County, and also a couple of other projects. One is in Lehigh and one is in Center County. So I'm pulling kind of elements of all these things together into one cohesive document, which I'll hopefully have for your feedback and review in the coming meeting or so. But the idea would be to have a preliminary idea of what we would want by probably August or so, because I would like to go after RACP for this, as well as a ARC, I forget the name of the program now, but there are a couple programs out there right now.
Is this a new building concept?
This would be a new building.
Yeah.
well, maybe even a modular kind of scenario where it's more like a mini, a campus of mini areas.
Yes, yeah. Good.
And frankly, it's nothing, I mean, it's not like this is my ingenious idea or something. You know, there are documents that are kicking around talking about something like this for 20 years, but I think it's time to take the bull by the horns. And
well, I think that's very much needed. I think that's incubators.
We have no incubator space in Portland right now.
No, I know.
And we have no, very little high-tech manufacturing space, and certainly none that's. I like our incubator space over at Enterprise Road, but it's not high-tech by any means. It's just a, it's a nice shell building. Okay, anyway, just want to let you know that I'm working on that actively, and we'll be in discussions with the county executive and other stakeholders in the near future to see if we can get some funding lined up for it. The Pleasant Street property is no movement on that since last meeting. However, SEBA, specifically Brad Russell, would like to meet with the board at some point to discuss that project. I've also gone out with them to look at a couple of other properties. They were asking for our support in potentially helping to rehab them. I think it's fair to say after looking at them that there's no rehabbing them, so that's a discussion that kind of got closed between the last meeting and now. They're not asking for assistance because I think all are in agreement that they're not rehabable. I have a few facilities updates. We're sealing the driveways, getting one of the trucks undercoated and repaired. The hydrant was installed at by Absolute Fire at One Plastics. There's a water supply issue over there where the sprinkler system was coming off of one of our tenants' systems. And so the city has recommended that we get a new connection directly in from the street. Cost would be about $4,000 to do. I don't think we really have an option because we shouldn't be running the sprinklers off of our tenants' water system. NTEC is actively replacing the floor over at, V&M is replacing parts of the concrete floor at NTEC like yesterday and today. Let's see. Dave wanted you to know that they're working on replacing the small tractor bucket, rebuilding it. The power sweeper that we've, I don't know how long we've been talking about that power sweeper, but I remember you telling me about this time last year, so it's at least been a while. Supposedly, the parts have been shipped.
Yeah.
I said I'll believe it when I see it, but the Clark lift is down. Larry Heyer is has a connection to a solar panel expert, and they're coming in just to look at it tomorrow, I think, just to see what they think about our solar panel system.
Is that out of operation completely, or just components?
It's just one.
Okay.
Boy, I'm blanking right now on the.
That's okay.
Whatever that little thing is called.
The little thing?
Yeah, right.
It's not a battery, a mini transformer or something. I don't know. Either way, no, I'd GDSA say like a tenth of it.
Yeah, I get it.
We had some complaints in the last few rainstorms about leaks in the roof over at One Plastics. No surprise there, right? You could probably guess where. We did a temporary fix. It seems to be holding for now, but boy, that might just be the perfect segue into you, but I'll finish these real quick. Replacing a gas line over at Puck, and you may have seen that we took a bunch of trees down here over at Snyder Circle, maybe some over by One Plastics, but either way, there were in all instances either dead ash or dead trees or instances where they were composing a safety issue, so just took care of it. Still going after the fair grant, that'll be in the fall. There's a new ARC grant that I mentioned earlier, I can't remember the name of it right now, which we'll be pursuing. And We got a response back on Green Junction RCAP that's been extended to December, I think.
Yes.
Fairhaven one, I guess, is complete, right?
Well, it isn't Fairhaven, it's well, CADC.
CADC.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Well, the project is complete. The grant is not. Okay. I mean, we're applying. You just signed
right.
for the next one. We got another two or three to go, and of course, we got to get through audit. So,
right.
It's at least 6 months down the road.
So this, we do have more invoices to.
There should be two more coming.
Okay. Very good. Whole home I already described, and we will be getting information back from the USDA hopefully next month on whether we were awarded the RDBG grants that we submitted in the spring. Any questions for me? Very good. I also gave the facilities report, of course, and Shelley has the financial reports.
Did we get an appraisal back from the property we discussed a couple meetings ago?
Did we actually get the appraisal back?
I have not received anything.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. So we did have the appraisal done. They actually may be still waiting on that capital improvement list on me. I know that's on my to-do list, so there might be a little more. I have not done any kind of cost benefit on whether it makes sense to sell the building or not. But we needed that number either way, whether it was to offload the property or use it as a match for grant purposes. So, yeah, we went ahead and got the appraisal in the works.
All right. Financials. Checking and savings. There are $3,831,908. Total current assets, $9,774,440. Total fixed assets, $2,172,428. Total assets, $12,087,765. Total current liabilities, $69,905. Equity, $12,017,860, and then total liabilities and equity, $12,087,765. Year to date, our income is $1,501,772. Our expenses, $1,400,000.
You're not going to win
now. I know. Get my teacher voice out. $1,409,690, and then our income $92,081. And then she did put four notes on the back, so you can see what those are.
What's the return of the transformer?
Well, we paid for that transformer almost 2 years ago.
Yeah, I know.
They're just apparently we had a deposit down on it when we bought it.
But
we paid them and then they had to reimburse us on it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Okay.
Are they pushing on us right now about holding it there? Or do we want to get it down here?
I thought Tammy told me month or two ago that they...
I know it's been brought up that they wanted to know when we're going to get it off the property, but I haven't heard anything probably in 4 or 5 months.
I had almost hate to speak to it because I think I know what she told me, but I'd rather find out for sure. I'll follow up on that.
I do want to point out on the payment status report, if you look at loan 0360, this has been an outstanding loan that has been discussed many times. He did stop yesterday. He gave us a check, a blank check. Tammy has to figure out how many, or what the total with penalties and things are. So that will be paid off, and Tammy will work with Carney's office to get that completely
and
done and signed.
That's finally done.
So, yeah.
It's going to be done with such a small amount, what we've gone through.
Right. So that will be taken care of and off the books.
I know that there's 280s being sold in that building, so. What was the other one? 293, that's normal.
Yeah.
Do you need a motion to accept the financials?
Yep. Someone? Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All righty. So, unfinished business?
No unfinished business.
New business?
I would like to introduce Dan Becker from Garland Company. He is the gentleman that walked all the roofs of the CIDC and RDA back in the snow. I don't remember exactly when that was, but
a little while ago.
And as I mentioned in previous meetings, that's one of our greatest liabilities, in particular the one white roof, vinyl roof over one plastics, is beyond shot. It's, I assume you'll get into the details, but it's something that we can't really wait much longer on to fix. We are getting tenant complaints. The other things, so at the last meeting you had authorized me to go ahead and make some, what did you call them, remedial improvements, like the amount of $25,000 or something, essentially save the existing, but this presentation is more, not so much about what's happening this summer in terms of preservation, but the plan for the next year or two to get this thing fixed permanently. Well, as permanently as it can be. So thanks for coming up, Dan. He's come, I don't know, like 5 times or something to meet with us.
Yeah, that's okay. That's great.
Really appreciate
Love
it.
I'm from Mercer, so this is easy. No big deal. I appreciate everybody giving me a chance to sit in and share some information. So, as the director said, Dan Becker from Garland. And so what Garland... I sort of went overkill on this, and I won't make you sit through all of the slides. We're just going to make this as much of a discussion as possible, and also respect the fact that the bandwidth is already a little strained, I would say. So what I'd like to do is just make this make the discussion of the One Plastics Road facility and the priorities and the existing situation, just again, make it a dialogue, talk about how we weigh priorities, what the solutions look like, and then what the road would be to get to those solutions from a procurement project management standpoint. And really just my main goal is give you a better sense of what's going on up there and kind of some of the decisions you're going to be facing. So as far as Garland goes, think of Garland as kind of the glue where it comes to, I'm a building envelope expert, so roofing, waterproofing, anything that keeps water out of buildings, okay? That's my bread and butter. Garland is an employee-owned company. We are 100% focused on delivering reliable solutions that we are long-term, we're accountable for them, right? So think of us as the glue between design, labor, material, and then longevity and performance, okay? So we seek to basically address the wounds that some of our clients have had in the past where they do projects and either the building envelope is de-emphasized in the project, or there's one of those blame game situations where, after the fact it's done and it's nobody's fault. There's problems and it's nobody's fault. So That's sort of where we sit in the transaction, and kind of where I start is the evaluation. And as the director mentioned, we've done a couple of different visits now. We've talked about strategy. We've talked about a lot of different things here. But my value, in addition to just being the glue between all these different processes, is to really come in and try to figure out the best way for any entity to spend their money in the most strategic way possible. And that means upfront spend balanced against life cycle spend, right? Results versus, you know, promises, basically. And so what we try to do there is really just look at the whole process, apply some lean principles, and figure out the best way to deliver you a successful project, maximizing, you know, the value of your spend, and minimizing anything we can that doesn't result in long-term value, okay? So this is sort of just our process, and again, that's kind of where we're on the front end of the design and the engineering to evaluate a facility and say, okay, here's its weaknesses, here are the things that we need to change. That bleeds into design when it comes to figuring out a solution, matching the right products to the right design and the right, you know, the correct engineering. 80% of your spend is probably going to be on your contractors, okay? That's where your money's going to go, so we want to bring the best contractors to bear. We want top-of-the-line professionalism and financial stability. Having a contractor go out of business on a job is far too common. It doesn't happen to us because, again, we're doing stress tests on these contractors from both, again, the quality of their work and their financials at all times. That protects us. That protects you. All right? Inspections to make sure that quality assurance is provided. Haven't written a perfect spec yet. That's why we got to make sure that on roof, on project site inspections are being done to make sure that the spec is being followed, but also unforeseen conditions. You know, when you work with great contractors, they want to do the right thing anyway. But sometimes, and you'll see with the deep dive on the white roof at One Plastics, sometimes the unforeseen is bigger than you might want, right? Just based on the challenge at hand. And then the warranty, really being accountable for design, labor, and material for the life of your asset, okay? So just want to get into, and some of this is, you know, this is kind of cart before the horse type stuff, but basically what this talks about is, you know, we are taking an ownership of the challenge of these projects, and it's all about accountability. It's about doing things correctly, and it's about, again, cradle to grave accountability. Accountability for the design and the engineering, accountability for the products being used, getting the best contractors involved, utilizing procurement vehicles like Omnia or, you know, even you know, ESCO approaches, whatever provides the best value for the client in their particular situation. Omnia Partners is a procurement vehicle that I'll talk about a little bit later that provides great value for public procurement projects. So we'll dive into that a little bit. So I've already kind of covered this, but this is my process. This is sort of my four steps to success, and that's what I kind of bring to bear anytime I'm looking at an opportunity or just trying to provide my expertise. We have project going on down the street at the high school. You know, so that's a big one. That's certainly had its challenges, but at the same time, it's going really, really well. You know, we worked on the Warren County Courthouse. I did evaluations of every city of quarry roof and building envelope. Wasn't involved with any of the projects, but was happy to provide that service. So that's the way that I sort of earn opportunities is bringing this process to bear and trying to provide good advice for folks that are considering their options. Okay.
Involved in the high school.
Yeah, that's the high school project that's ongoing right now.
Oh, that's ongoing.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, we did phase one last year. We're in the middle of phase two, and then we'll wrap up with phase three next year. But it's basically the entirety of the high school minus a small area. So here's your roof plan at One Plastics. Now, our biggest area of concern right now is number 9. This is a spray foam roof, which means it's the original roof. Someone said, well, we could tear off this original roof, but that's going to be a lot of work and that's going to cost money. Or we could just spray this foam solution over it, put a coating on it, and, you know, come what may. Well, what may has come. We are dealing with the challenges of sort of shortcuts, okay? The rest of the roofs, there are definitely some higher priority, and you'll see on my next slide here, I kind of broke it down into the so 9 is your highest priority, that's red. We look at repairs, we look at restorations, we look at different warranty terms of replacement solutions to kind of find the sweet spot based on the client. 9 is obviously the white roof. You got 4 other sections that I would consider to be in poor condition that have various different solutions that might be might be in consideration. And then you got your yellows that are fair, and then your green, which is good. So just, roughly speaking, I'd say you got more than half of the building is in, fair to good shape, but the stuff that's bad is in pretty bad shape, all right? And that's the nature of a big structure like that with a lot of different areas. So here's why roof 9 is your top priority, okay? This is that spray foam, and this is what happens to those spray foam roofs. The birds immediately start pecking at the coating. The coating is very thin, and so it doesn't take much for the coating to begin to wear down and degrade, even without the birds pecking at it. And once the moisture gets in there, even though, polyisocyanurate is the typical roof insulation that's used, it's closed cell, but it will absorb moisture. And so once those holes start and that moisture starts, you not only have a huge issue in terms of leaks and things like that, but you also have weight. Okay, so now you have weight that's on top of that roof deck that roof deck was never considering. Your typical roof, the water's going to shed. Some water might come in if it has leaks, but for the most part, it's not going to have residual. It's not going to carry residual weight from that water. Well, this roof carries residual weight because all that moisture is trapped in those areas where the coating has failed. And as you can see, there's a heck of a lot of moisture up there because there's no slope. Okay, the design is poor. There's no way for the water to get to the drain, so it just lays up there, and it lays up there. And the combination of ponding water and UV on a roof like that, it kind of acts as a magnifying glass, and so that accelerates the deterioration of any roof surface, but especially this kind. And the only thing that's probably saving us is the original roof underneath is probably keeping, there's probably a good bit of water that's trapped between the original roof and this roof that's failing on top. And that's the only reason that we haven't had more complaints probably from the tenants. And so the number one factor in designing a solution for this roof is going to be reconfiguring the way that it drains or doesn't drain as it
are,
is right
now. Are the roof drains up there now?
Yes. Yeah.
Are they open and flowing?
I mean,
it's a flat roof.
To an extent.
Well, no, I know it's a flat roof, but there must be some way.
It's a great question. So there you can see the cage right there, but you can also see, if you look closely, you can see it's sort of a high point.
Water's not getting.
That's right. So the water's not even getting there. Now, on a modern roof that we would do now, you can also see a scupper over here, too. So they have, a place for water to go out that way. But again, it's all ponded up right here. It's not. That's almost like an overflow, the way that's functioning. So when we do a new roof these days, we use tapered insulation, which moves the water to the drains. It lessens the ponding water effect, and that's how we get longevity. Okay?
Yeah, I'm familiar with all that.
Yes.
So the roof drain system that was there now, what has happened? The roof is settled? Or why isn't the water?
Well, because it didn't have slope to begin with. Like, the original roof probably was dead flat. And then when they put this coating on there, some of these spray foam contractors will purport to provide slope as they're installing, but more often than not, it comes out like this. It just mimics the original design. And in some cases, I was actually at a nursing home on Friday, a UPMC owns. It's got spray foam over an old built-up roof, and it's undulating to the point where it looks like waves, you know what I mean? So this is actually... as much as I don't like these spray foam roofs, this one's not as terrible. But the larger point is all of this has to come off. There are no shortcuts, right? So this is already, we've followed this shortcut as far as we can go. The roof's not draining. There's multiple roofs in place. So but code says you can only have 2 roofs. So there's 2 roofs in place already. And in order to get a clean bill of health for this area specifically, we need to go down to the deck, tear everything off, and start over again with tapered insulation, proper design, proper engineering, make sure the wind uplift is correct, and design a roof that's going to provide longevity.
What's original? Oh, I'm sorry.
What's the original roof material?
That was my question.
Yeah, I believe, now we didn't cut it the day that I was up there, but I believe it's a built-up roof underneath there. So, and it's probably a built-up that's dating close to the construction of the building, is usually the way it goes.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons they do spray foam, because they look and they say, boy, this would be a real pain to tear off.
So if we get that off, we won't know what kind of condition our deck was in either.
Well, and so, now when we were inside the building, the deck looks
good on one side, yeah.
That's right. And a lot of areas, it's not as bad. For a building that's had leaks in various areas, the deck doesn't look terrible, but then again, there are some water diverters up there, you know, just dealing with leaks and, you know, just kind of tarps, basically, redirecting water that's getting in the building. So, but you're right, we're going to need, one of the reasons that we're going to want to tear off down the deck is so we can evaluate that deck and make sure that we're not grandfathering bad deck into the new roof. The long and the short of it is, this is all expensive, okay? It's expensive, right? You know, there's just no two ways about it. You have, this is one of the worst tear-offs that you can have in the industry, is spray foam, because it's so wet. It usually doesn't come apart as easily as you would like, you know? A lot of times, I mean, think about it. Your standard single-ply roof or you know, membrane roof, you peel it back, you get rid of the insulation, you know, the tear-off is not bad. Something like this, the amount of weight that it's carrying, the fact that it comes off typically in an unpredictable fashion, and that's before you even get to the roof underneath it, okay? So, that's part of, when I said that the 80 cents of every dollar goes to your contractor, well, this is why, you know? I mean, and we're gonna, you know, we would need to do some testing as far as making sure that there's not asbestos underneath, in the built-up underneath, make sure that that's remediated properly. I'm sure everybody can just hear sort of the dollar signs, right? We're dealing with the fallout from shortcuts, which means we got to do everything correctly here, and make sure that we're being realistic when you're looking at your options. The fact is, most of your money you're going to spend is going to be in tearing off what's up there already. The putting back of the new roof is almost the easy part. It's really getting rid of this system that's up there. And actually, you can see how even something like this curb, you know, they bury it in foam. So there's no telling, you know, whether those curbs are going to be able to be salvaged. We can sometimes shave off everything and make sure that the curb stays. And a lot of times we can, but again, it's kind of a part of the nefarious aspect of these crappy spray foam roofs. They really, really do long-term damage. I mean, you can, shortcuts are a way of life. I understand people, you know, there's sometimes you just have to make decisions and do your best, but I don't like shortcuts that, you know, result in long-term damage. And that's unfortunately what happens with the spray foam. It's just, it really puts the health of the building in jeopardy. So this is sort of what I alluded to. Now we figure, okay, getting the roof replaced is obviously where we're at here. And let's match a solution that meets our goals for the facility. It's a revenue-generating facility. It's one of two very large facilities. It's under the authority's management. You have a tenant in there in that particular area. This area is also kind of it's a nice dry run for how we'd handle any projects going forward at other areas of One Plastics, at Enterprise, any of those buildings. This would be the way that we'd attack these projects. So one of the reasons I'm focusing on the white roof is because it's absolutely the highest priority, but it's also a nice way to talk about how we approach a challenge, okay? And we don't get any easy ones, we get the hard ones, so kind of used to it. So lifecycle costing is a tool we use to basically look at different solutions and figure out what makes the most sense. One of the reasons we work with counties, school districts, hospitals, redevelopment organizations, local government is because they're institutions. Their facilities aren't going anywhere. They need long-term results in order to justify, making the investment into these properties. Hospitals, courthouses, large industrial facilities, these are assets, right? And so we like to create a model that shows, hey, your investment up front is gonna be this, but here's what your long-term ownership cost is gonna be when you spread it out over 30 or 40 years or depending on whatever the solution is, okay? So when we get to Section 9 options, we're typically looking at three different approaches. Repairs, extend the life any way we can. Restoration or layover, that's already been attempted there. That spray foam roof is both a restoration and a layover. Essentially what that means is if you only had one roof, like for instance, there's other areas of that One Plastics facility where they're a great candidate for restoration. We could, for significantly less money than a new roof would cost, we can do either a retrofit of a new roof or even a liquid applied solution over what's there because it's in decent shape, right? That is a cost benefit consideration. Best practice is always to replace the roof, but again, that's sometimes not always an option. We have that option in other areas of the building. We do not have that option in Section 9. The roof is shot and we're dealing with the fallout of sort of half measures. So when we get to replacement, it's big, it's a lot of money, and a lot of that money is going towards getting rid of what's up there. The putting back of the new roof is more of a design and engineering challenge than it is the labor involved with tearing off that existing roof.
Is that roof leaking now? Bad? I mean, is it damaging inside? I mean, the operation of, that's Advantage Puck, right?
Micronics
Advantage. I'm sorry. Micronics, that's what. So it's creating damage inside to there.
We get complaints regularly.
Yeah. Needs to be done. I just wondered if that was how big of a.
Well, our original plan was, when we first looked at everything, our original plan was okay. Let's see what we can do with regular strategic maintenance, and let's see if we can't extend the life of any roofs that it's appropriate and practical to do so. Let's extend the life, right? Mm-hmm. And let's see how long it would be practical to take that approach. And as you could see in that matrix, more than half of the building, and same approach over at Enterprise, a lot of the building, we can do that, right? There's just a couple areas where it's beyond that, okay? And so that's as important as anything, is identifying where we can do, extend the life, where we need to make decisions, in a more timely manner. Because one of the things that you're gonna have with your roofs that are sort of in that middle ground, that insulation is very valuable. And we don't want the insulation to get soaked to the point where we're tearing off down the deck. If we act in a strategic way over the next 5 to 10 years, whatever the timeline is, you can salvage a lot of that insulation either through retrofits or liquid applied roofing, and you're being able, you're from a waste standpoint, you're reducing waste, but you're also, you're reducing cost, you're reducing labor, and you're still getting longevity and responsible solutions. But again, it's those extremes. It's the ones that we can repair, and it's the ones that are beyond repair. Those are the ones that, to me, are sort of in discussion today. Now, what this shows you is what a typical construction project like this would entail, right? A lot of times a customer, the authority might go to a consultant or an architect and have them come in and do what I've done. They'll pay money for the assessment and things like that. It's important to note, I do all this risk, I do I do at-risk evaluations of these things because that's the best way for me to demonstrate value. And ultimately, I can't dictate outcomes in terms of how the project goes, but what I can do is bring my expertise to bear up front and make sure that I leave people, even if we're not involved in the project together, I leave you better than I found you in terms of giving you solid advice and giving you a strategic approach. Now, where I will do a little salesmanship is saying, okay, look, so these are the typical ways. So if it's contractor driven, maybe the authority puts together a spec, they put it out there, you get a bunch of contractors coming in, the contractor maybe bids the spec as it's suggested, or maybe they recommend their own solution, whatever it is, and it becomes an apples to pizza type comparison, right? You're not getting consistency across your solutions. The authority might not have a great way to vet the contractors and make sure that they're reliable. There's a lot of risk in that contractor-driven design. The consultant design is you pay somebody to come in and do the things that I do at risk for no cost, and you basically have them come in and design a solution, which is fine. The only thing is that consultant, that architect, does not have long-tail accountability. They're really there until the project starts. They manage it a little bit, and then they wave goodbye once it's done, and that's how you get into that blame game situation, okay? So I just show you these to show you how projects are typically procured.
Aren't there warranties on that roof when you're done?
There are, but a lot of times, again, when you have sort of a third party coming in and doing design and doing engineering, they'll make it as like bland as possible, the solution, and then the contractors will come in and they'll bid within reason of the spec, hey, here's what we're gonna do. But then inevitably when a problem comes up in year five, the contractor says, well, I followed the spec that the architect wrote. The architect says,
you've got a warranty. You've got a 20-year warranty.
Right. But a lot of times it's the warranty, the material warranty, you say, this is a bad design. This is a bad detail. Who did this? You know what I mean? And it's like, just take responsibility.
I'm doing $300,000 right now at Fomex. But anyway.
Yeah, we did the, we did your, entryway or the office roof, the metal roof.
Mm-hmm.
We did that one a while back, and then we provided a bunch of options for the rest of the building, but that's, you guys had a lot of challenges out there for sure, a lot of stuff. So yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is trying to make sure that whoever holds that warranty needs to be involved with the design and the engineering, needs to be involved with making sure the contractors are great, and then needs to, no questions asked whenever you have a warranty. It's not, well, that design was wrong or that contractor didn't do it the right way. Just own it, right? And so that's what we're kind of advocating for when we take an approach is we work with consultants, we work with architects, we work with engineering folks, but we do it, again, in conjunction with them to make sure that everything is being done appropriately. And then we also make sure, again, that we're bringing those great contractors to bear to make sure that everybody's bidding the same scope of work, and that there are no plausible deniability ways to get out of honoring that warranty. And we do no dollar limit, long-term warranties, no proration, edge to edge. You know, we're basically saying, hey, if you spend to do these things the right way, you deserve a warranty and you deserve a partner for the life of the building, for the life of the building and the life of the warranty, that's taking the same sort of owner's type approach to things. And that's really what we try to bring is, again, no blame game, no off-roads for accountability. Everything comes back to a single point of contact. Okay?
Dan, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Good presentation.
Thank you. Yeah, sorry. I don't want to overwhelm you guys, but if we did a project, if we looked at a project, Omnia would probably be the vehicle that we would utilize from a procurement standpoint. If we get there, and there's lots of time to look at more information, I can send you guys some stuff as far as Omnia goes, but I want you to just, more important than anything, understand what's going on up there from a roofing perspective, and then as you kind of make decisions, I'd be happy to fill in the blanks in terms of how to execute any sort of projects. If the authority did a project, and you decided you need to take action on that foam roof, the best time to bid that is going to be in the fall of the preceding year. So if you said, hey, we need to replace that roof as soon as possible in spring 24, it needs to be out to bid in the fall. That's the best way to get the best contractor response, the best contractor pricing, and then everything is slotted in. You can lock in materials. You're not going to have any increases. We don't do change orders or anything like that. Everything is agreed upon, and then you hit the ground running in the new season. So that's the one thing I'll talk to you about in terms of construction schedules. Please make sure that you that's as important as anything else. I have people right now, hospitals, that come and want to bid stuff out and do it in the fall. Every good contractor's busy, you know? It's a challenge. So timing is going to be as important from a cost standpoint as anything else that we're discussing, okay? Please, as you get into your discussion, I can send you kind of my...
That'd be great.
My deck, you know, whatever aids in the discussion, but...
For my part, it's mostly a matter of figuring out the financing on our end, because I think we all agree that it needs to be done, right? With your caveat, of course. And I strongly think that this is the route, like the Omnia selection of Garland is the route, because of the one nectar ring, number one. Number two, the bargaining power, economies of scale that Garland brings to bear, especially in this crazy supply chain kind of market. And third, the long-term accountability that really you can only get from a GISA or this kind of model. So that is my strong recommendation. I don't think we're asking for anything today, right?
Because no, not at all. No, yes. This is an informational thing.
But if I can get the financing together, I think I'm going to be coming back to the recommendation that we move on this as quickly as possible at this route.
So Dan, would you be working as a general contractor or as an engineer? I heard all of that.
Yeah, so I kind of wear a lot of hats, right? So Garland provides engineering support, we provide design, we do all of that as part of any project we do, and again, a lot of that is done at risk. Then I am also the guy that, you know, between me and my project manager, we're on the roof during the project making sure that, now we would, so I'll backtrack a little bit. We would provide engineering, we could, you know, design the spec, write the spec, we would do all of the uplift testing, any of the asbestos testing that needs done over there. You know, if you folks said, hey, let's say we want to run towards a 2024 project, I would schedule, you know, core testing to check for asbestos, pull out testing if we need to based on the deck, pull all of that design and engineering data together, put everything into a specification, make sure that it is a performance spec, or if we did like Omnia through procurement, you can actually do a turnkey where Garland acts as the general contractor. Mm-hmm. And anything else that you wanted to do in addition to roofing could be seated underneath Garland there as the GC. So let's say you had windows that you needed to do. Let's say some of those units needed to be replaced or something like that. We talked about solar as a possible avenue to pursue for both One Plastics and Enterprise. I have thoughts on both sides of that ledger. I truly think it all comes down to, can you guarantee you're going to get the money? And
we don't want to put any of our local money in.
What I would say is you design a roof that is suitable for solar if and when the money is there, and it has to be at a state level. I mean, you have experience with this. Waiting for federal funds for solar, not going to happen. But you design a roof that could be retrofitted with solar down the road as a way to bring in additional income or something like that, if the deal made sense. But so basically, I'm involved with everything, yeah. Right?
So if we hired your firm to do this, would you subcontract the roof work, the contractor to come in?
Absolutely.
So you would do the selection. So the bidding process on this would be to bid this work.
Exactly, and then he hires McCreary.
Yeah, or, right. Yeah.
Probably.
I mean, it really comes down to every bid is different. Sometimes a client says, I know all the roofers in the area, yeah. I want McCreary.
Yeah.
And you sign a paper that says this is what we want.
Well, it's gonna depend on what you do with grants. If you've got grants, you know, I mean, there's all
the then you can't. You're right.
There's all kinds of
procurement. Yes, exactly. I take all my cues from, either your covenants or your grants requirements or whatever, and I tailor the bid accordingly. Right. You can do turnkey, you know, and that significantly cuts down on runway and time, or you can do a pure public bid, you know, again, with ways to protect your interests as far as that goes. The number one thing for us is just no compromising on talent, no compromising on the contractor quality. Because especially in this last couple years with the spike in material costs and commodity pricing, there's a lot of folks who have gotten into the roofing game as a way to capture, you know, whether it's public money, you know, any opportunities that they see available. So we are there to kind of act as a guard between, you know, someone that might be considered a fly-by-night versus someone that's very trustworthy. Because, again, they're going to get most of your money is going to be where that goes. And you don't, it's important to know, you don't owe Garland anything unless and until a project is approved. And at that point, all we're providing is really material. You know, we're not working on a,
Here's not getting your at risk.
That's right. It's truly at risk. There's nothing until it's a signed project.
No breakage fee.
No.
Wow.
No, none at all. Okay. This is all, again, it's all part of being
able forward.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So again, everything is kind of cascading from that financing piece. Once you folks figure out where you're at in terms of your schedule and your financing, everything like that, if the follow-up discussion would be, okay, here's what I would recommend as a timeline, here are the key dates, and again, it's...
Yeah, I think we just need to get to that.
We
probably should get moving, too, with you and your state of condition. We belong to meeting.
Sorry, I apologize. Yeah,
that's okay.
Thank you.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for your time and attention.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I mean, that may not have been the most riveting conversation, but this is probably one of the most important conversations because of the liability.
Agreed.
But sure.
Yeah.
So, and yes, I have been asked to get my butt to Warren. So, there is nothing to talk about, I guess, on the Pleasant Street that I haven't already mentioned. There are a couple of quick executive session ideas.
Yeah, I have a quick one, too.
They will not take very long. So, I guess, Mr. Chair, if you wanted to call an executive session.
I'd like to, call executive session. I'd like a board only for, 2 minutes real quick. That way we can get him out of there.